Hey, it's Friday. We have Sadie with us. She's from Bernard Zell here in Chicago. Good morning. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good.
Good. And I noticed you got these two mope brothers of yours over there. You want to say hi to them?
Hi, Judah and Gabby.
Yeah. They seem like nice enough guys. Do you like one more than the other?
No.
No, equally? All right. I'll be honest with you, I got a brother that I like more than the other two brothers.
What if the other two brothers are watching?
That's beauty. They don't know where I live. So makes it a little bit easier.
Ah, Paul and the kids. Friday mornings on Channel 9. We'll check in with Paul in just a second. Trump's back after 4 days off, and he's angry. There is a New York primary, but it's still a week away, so you can spend a week yakking about that. How is Ted Cruz getting Trump delegates for contests that he already won? Pat Brady will be on later to explain that. Paul Coit is on this morning with all sorts of news out of England, from the prime minister's problem to the Trump painting we talked about last week to the fact that a Brit won the Masters for the first time since Nick Faldo beat a choking dog, Greg Norman. By the way, if Greg Norman called Jordan Spieth last night, you think Jordan Spieth let it go to voicemail?
I would think so.
I would hope so. Pat will be in. Coach Q later. The Blackhawks and the Blues. Wednesday night's the opener. Is that right, Dave?
That is right at 8:30, Steve.
And, we got these late playoff games.
Is St. Louis. We're in the same time zone.
I know. It's ridiculous.
8:30 on Wednesday night, and they also have an 8:30 game here a week from tomorrow.
Rich Lerner from the Golf Channel on whatever happened yesterday, and we'll talk about that. And Mayor Rahm Emanuel this morning as well. He wants to take me for a bike ride in the bike lanes. At 6:12, let me go to Paul Coit standing by now. You know, I was watching that Steve Harvey thing with the kids last night.
You talking to me?
Yeah, well, I thought I would. Yes.
Well, you said Paul Coit.
I said Paul Coit?
Yeah.
Well, can I call you Paul Coit?
You can call me whatever you want to call me, yeah.
So anyway, Paul Coit.
Yep.
Paul Conrad, I saw that Steve Harvey thing last night.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Is it?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I got to start turning the TV set on. I keep forgetting.
It's the flat thing in the corner.
All right.
Yeah. But he's no Paul Conrad with the kids.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you should have that network deal. Now, you're a golfer.
Yeah.
I'm a golfer.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you like to be a golfer, too? And yesterday at the Masters, Jordan Spieth hit a shot on 12. Now, everybody goes, well, he hit the first one in the water. That's not the problem. Problem is the second one.
Right.
Problem is not the third one he hit in the bunker. The problem is the second one.
Yeah.
The second one was a 30 handicap miss.
Yeah, that's my kind of miss.
The second one was a Trump hairpiece flying farther than the ball did. So it brings up the question. We'll make this a text question today. We don't have any time to do this.
All right.
We got to do it today because there's no reason to do it tomorrow. What's the most embarrassing thing ever to happen to you at work?
Ooh. Oh, at work.
Because he was working yesterday.
Yeah.
And how'd you like to have your worst moment at work happen in front of millions of people on TV?
Yeesh.
Not great. Now, I embarrass myself in front of hundreds of thousands of people on the radio every day. You do it on TV.
Yeah. Can you nail down one that you would say is the
one?
Most embarrassing?
Guys, one?
The show goes till 10. Just
one?
FYI.
Yeah.
I don't think I can off the top of my head, but there have been many.
Yeah, I'm pretty regularly kind of walk out of here like, oh, God. No one was watching.
If your job is to be a dork, you know, it's kind of hard to pinpoint which dark moment it is.
Right.
Well, Dave, you have one.
Oh, I have no problem. You were there for it.
I was?
Yes, and I think you were too.
Oh, when you dress like Little Red Riding
Hood? No. That's
when you and I were in bed together at
the
Intercontinental?
No, well, I hadn't thought of that.
That was just Tuesday.
Dave, how many do you have?
I like how nobody asked a follow-up to that question.
No, I'm thinking the Pajamagram commercial.
Oh.
With my wife in the studio.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Dave did this sexed-up Pajamagram commercial, Paul.
Really?
And the kids. And the choir.
And there was a choir of kids behind us, and his wife walked in.
Nice.
It was sexy, Paul.
That get you anywhere?
No.
Once you whacked him with a purse. Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But that's your texter question, 312-981-7200. Do you have one off the top of your head, Paul?
I can't think
of
it. How
about one for the rest of the staff? Who else on the show has embarrassed themselves?
You know, outside of Robin calling Thailand Thailand, you know.
Oh, no.
Which is what Larry has called it for years.
You know, there are parts of Thailand that are Thailand.
Right.
There's some, like, I feel like half my career fits into this category, right? I walk around in a fair amount of shame. I can't think of anything specific. I'm sorry.
How about a golf embarrassment? Same thing? Too many?
Way too many.
Yeah.
Way too many. I will say I was with Bill Weir golfing once when he lost his mind. And he proceeded to take, we were up on a ridge above a lake. And after not being able to get the
couldn't clear the lake
ball over the water, he proceeded to just unload his entire golf bag and the bag piece by piece into the lake.
Oh, well, there you go.
So we did a little swimming later on, which was a lot of fun.
That's why they keep running through the staff on the Wonder List on CNN.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, listen, like I got to get the runs.
Yeah, take it easy.
All right.
What?
Okay.
That's a technical TV talk for he's got to do the weather.
So we heard Dave's. Are we going to hear yours?
Golf?
No, one of your darkest moments at work?
How do you pick?
I know.
I mean, there's tons. See, that's why it's not really a question for me. Mm-hmm. When you live your life in public, you're going to be an ass occasionally.
True. Very true.
And if it's a path you've chosen professionally, I mean, come on.
And good luck with
that. How about moments I wasn't?
Oh, that, yeah, it'd be faster.
It's a separate question. Most embarrassing moment at work, 617. By the way, Jordan Spieth's going to be fine. This kid is so well put together and so well balanced. If anybody's got a chance of coming back from this and being fine, it's him.
Yeah.
And also, you're not Greg Norman. You're not 30—how old was Norman? 36 when that happened? 37?
Sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, it's 20 years ago. He might have been 38. You're not Greg Norman. You haven't had the Masters ripped from your clutches two or three times. No. Remember one year, he finished second in all four Masters. Or all four majors.
Yeah.
Including losing the Masters to Larry Mize, who chipped in from 120 feet in an impossible lie. So Greg Norman in some ways had a right to lose his mind, but he lost it the entire day. Phil Mickelson, when he lost the U.S. Open, Phil Mickelson's hitting it in the trees every couple of days. You know, it wasn't a total surprise that he'd knock it in the trees, and then people forget, but the second shot was the problem there, too, at Wingfoot. Arnold Palmer had a seven-shot lead with nine holes to go, but wanted to go for Ben Hogan's all-time U.S. Open record, and he blew the U.S. Open, which he never won. Was it the U.S. Open? No, he won the U.S. Open. PGA is what he never won. He never won the PGA. But he blew a chance to win another major. So, you know, you have those. But the thing yesterday came completely out of the blue because the kid was on fire.
Yeah.
Four straight birdies at the end of the front nine.
That's why I said to Dave, I couldn't quite call it a meltdown because he didn't do it over a long period of time.
30 minutes from hell.
Yeah.
He called it a meltdown.
Yeah.
But he seem a little snippy this weekend, though, Saturday and Sunday?
I mean, he wasn't quite right.
Going back to Friday.
He wasn't quite right.
He was kind of a little tigerish out there. And
he wasn't quite all there, and he was fighting his driver. And, you know, he he'll be back. He'll be fine.
He will.
And, he handled himself. He had a little thing with a CBS cameraman afterwards, but mostly he was fine afterwards. But how about dial up the wheel of awkward? The tradition is last year's winner gives this year's winner the jacket.
Yes.
All you want to do is get in the car and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to hang around to give the guy the jacket who wins because you opened the door for him.
Had he won, who would have presented him with the jacket since he won last year?
Jim Nantz would have given him one of his other jackets.
This is what he said. He got up there afterwards, the tournament. He said,
as you can imagine, that was, I can't think of anybody else who may have had a tougher ceremony to experience.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah, it's true.
It's kind of whiny.
It's a little whiny. Yeah.
It is his job.
It is a little
as the defending
but
champ.
But think about it, you're in the lead pretty much.
But again,
time.
Well, you are. Yeah, you are in the lead all the
right,
time.
Right, and one hole.
Yeah. Golf's mean.
It's like our game.
Golf is mean.
Of course.
I was actually watching it.
It's hard to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Especially because it's golf and it's Mary.
Right. Yeah, that exactly. Made it especially
hard. It's hard to watch. Can you imagine being with Mary while you're watching this?
Thank goodness the cup. Hey.
Oh, my God. Look at your divot.
What?
By the way, Andrea won the Masters pool.
Yeah, I figured.
We'll get to those details later. What do you mean, do I not know who the game is? He's one of my people. 624 texters. 708 texter says, when I was in my late 20s, over 25 years ago, I was in advertising. I was showing my client my new Rolex watch, which was really a knockoff. Wouldn't you know it? The thing literally fell apart with crap flying everywhere just when I was trying to impress him.
Oh, jeez.
That's not good.
No.
Hey, Bob, if you go with our company, maybe you get yourself one of these. Oh, no! 847 texter, I was pregnant and my water broke while I was standing in the lobby of the bank where I worked talking to a customer. Mm. Well, you can't help that.
Oh, no.
You know, if they're the customer, do something appropriate. Grab a mop.
Unless the customer wanted to open, you know, a checking account or something and couldn't wait.
Maybe it was like, I don't know when this was, but maybe it was like one of those, what were they called, Dave? Christmas Club accounts? Was that what it was?
Yes.
Christmas yeah. Club yeah. accounts. Banks used to have these where you could go in, you could start a Christmas Club account, save money for Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So she's going in trying to take care of the kids, and a woman had a kid right in front of her. How about that?
That's crazy. Crazy.
630 texter says, well, given a talk to the board of directors, someone pointed out that a long piece of toilet paper that I had used to cover the seat an hour earlier was hanging from the waist of my pants.
Oh, okay, that's weird. Mm. That's bad.
Embarrassing moments at work. I remember one. I was doing a speech in Minneapolis in the early 90s, and Ron Majors' brother, Paul Majors, was a big TV anchor in Minnesota at the mm-hmm. time. He's been in L.A. for years. And a good guy and a friend. And we were doing something at the world-famous Guthrie Theater. And I have no idea why, but I had flop sweat like William Hurt from Broadcast News.
Oh.
Or not William Hurt, Albert Brooks. Yeah. Albert Brooks from Broadcast News. Because there was no reason to be nervous. I don't know why I was nervous. And I knew Paul.
Did you have the pit sweat just, and everything going too? Or?
Well, no. Fortunately, I didn't have that kind of shirt on.
Oh,
but
thank you.
But no, it was one of these wipe your face like over and over again kind of things. So that's but that's a minor
that's
one.
That's not too bad.
That's a minor
I mean, because
yeah.
everybody sweats.
Yeah. I had my fly open in front of 1,000 people.
Okay, that I remember.
Yeah.
You were
you
there
did?
For...
I was there?
You were there for that.
Yeah.
Where was that?
I think I was, too.
I think you were, too. We don't want to say where it was, because then everyone's going to go back and look at the pictures.
It was...
because there were some pictures that were taken.
You know what's funny? You're thinking of the show out in Oak...
Orland Park.
In Orland
it was
Park.
A remote, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of it. Oh!
Two different
Oh, there's
times.
Been another time?
Yeah, it's been a couple, apparently.
Yeah, but there was photographic wow. evidence from that one.
I was on stage in front of about 1,000 people, and...
oh, that's nothing.
And somebody said, hey! It was subtle. Somebody said, hey, you got your fly open! That's how I knew.
See, it was much more subtle in Orland Park at the Veterans, at this, the Veterans show.
Yeah, when I actually went, hey, my fly's open. I'm going to have to fix this.
Right before you introduced the Eagle Scout.
That's true. That's true.
But at least you were sitting down.
On the other side of the room, somebody went, hey, show off. Your fly's open. I said, thank you.
Oh, good time.
627, in honor of Jordan Spieth's meltdown yesterday. Trust me, I'm not picking on him. I'm just saying this is timing inappropriate. Your biggest meltdown at work, most embarrassing thing that happened to you at work, maybe the most costly thing that happened at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Let's do this. We'll take a break, come back, get your big story coming up. Dr. Kevin Most in a few minutes. Remember we had this discussion last week about how old can you be when you're having babies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did.
Because Janet Jackson canceled her tour, at least temporarily, and she is going to be 50 in about 10 minutes.
Right.
And Dr. Most has some information on that this morning, among other things, in case you're thinking about maybe, getting a little freaky.
A friend of mine had her first at 45.
Is that right?
Yeah, baby's fine. Everything's great, thank God.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you take care of yourself and you're genetically lucky, why not, right?
Mm-hmm. And you're under your doctor's care, of course. Yeah.
The why not, of course, would be when you're 47 and you go, I have a 2-year-old? It's 628, back in a moment on 720 WGN. $6.39, that overly important sounding music must mean our friend Dr. Kevin Most is standing by. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, impact every day. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Well, I feel bad for the speaker. Little Jordan.
No kidding. Wow.
Normally, we all have our meltdowns on the golf course, and the only people watching are your three friends who can't stop laughing at you.
Yeah.
When you hit the worst shot of your life, and millions are watching... That's bad. Because you know this, Doc. It's not the first one in the water. It's not the one in the bunker.
It was the second.
It's the Trump divot.
Yep.
It's the hairpiece he hit. That's the one he can't get out of his head.
Oh, you feel sorry for him. And then also then his strategy and his mindset just have to change completely when he gets on that 13th tee.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. When you panic at the highest level, and I've heard athletes at all levels talk about this, when you panic at the highest level, it's no different than when you panic playing for a couple of bucks on a Saturday morning on a golf course. The mind goes down the same way. Everything rushes. You just want to get through it, right? And you don't make conscious decisions anymore.
Yeah, but I texted Steve Melnick, and I were texting back and forth during this, and he makes that birdie on 9.
Yeah.
I said, game, match, set. This is over.
Yeah, 5 up.
It's like, wow.
He's 5 up.
But we'll take it in perspective, too. He's 22 years old.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll be fine. Yep.
He'll be fine.
We learned a whole heck of a lot.
That's when he actually acted like a 22-year-old, when he hit the flop shot that he didn't intend to flop.
Yeah.
Now, you know Phil Mickelson. You've known him for years.
Yep.
And when Phil lost that U.S. Open on the 72nd hole, we weren't as surprised necessarily because he was struggling with his driver all day and he was hitting it all over the parking lot. When Norman lost 20 years ago at the Masters, he had a meltdown starting basically on the first hole. The thing that was shocking about this is it came out of nowhere.
Oh, it did.
30 minutes. I
mean, yeah, what, he shoots 32 on the front?
Right, that different guy shows up on the 10th tee.
Exactly.
Very weird. Yeah. Have we tested him? We made him pee in a cup, make sure it was the same guy on the back nine?
Right.
So, at any rate, the question today, Doc, is your most embarrassing moment at work. So if you'd like to text us something, this is in honor of Spieth or dishonor of Spieth, I don't know. People think I'm picking on Spieth. No, it's just a timely question. Your most embarrassing moment at work. If you want to text me, you know, something about you and use a different name, we won't say it.
If you had that question for doctors, you would get some very interesting responses.
I bet.
Yep.
I'll bet that's true. All right, so Janet Jackson cancels her tour, at least postpones it at age 50. By the way, did you notice that they're not doing refunds?
I did.
Yeah, no, I heard they are doing some refunds, and then I heard that there were some that were not doing refunds.
Yeah, there's shows where she's going, well, I'm coming back. Why would I give you your money back?
That is just wrong.
It's ridiculous.
That's absolutely wrong.
It's ridiculous. So at any rate, the question came up, is she going to be 50 soon? And we don't know what her status is, but if she needs time to, you know, start her family, you assume she's going to try to have the baby. What's the new thought process as far as how late in life women can have kids?
Yeah, you know, when we look at that, we sit there and say, gosh, remember the old days when we really wanted people to have their first child in their 20s? And now weddings have been postponed a little bit, careers have been advancing, and now it's very common in their 30s. But certainly, after the age of 35, it's considered advanced maternal age, and we really want to watch the women much closer. Higher chance of high blood pressure, higher chance of diabetes. So the risk factors start to go up as you age. When you get up into your 40s and late 40s, those even go higher. And then also the chance of having a child with Down syndrome is very high as you reach, you know, anything over the age of 45.
And are you seeing a lot of over 45 moms?
We're not seeing a lot over 45 moms, but the number of moms over 40 have doubled in the last 10 years. We're seeing a lot more people who did saved eggs and had them frozen and now are having in vitro fertilization. Because after you really hit the age of 45, the chance of natural childbirth drops dramatically. You're down to about 5%, maybe even less than that of your eggs for a female. So the chance of normal reproduction is very low. But, you know, it's still happening. And hey, if you look at history, we've had women in their 70s deliver children. So it's unusual.
You can act as a surrogate, can't you, Doc?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of people that do act as surrogates.
Yeah.
Question, Doc, about family history. That has probably something to do with it, especially if you are over 45?
Well, there's some issues with family history on both sides. You know, some people can have the families where they have had advanced maternal age and have done fine. There's others that have had issues over the age of even 30 and 35, where you have to be much more cautious as you hit later in age.
Well, what is it, a crapshoot when you get older on whether or not it's going to work out?
Well, it is kind of I hate to say that, but it is. Also, the chance of miscarriage just accelerates through this as well. So really, people that individuals, females that get pregnant in their 40s, they have a 40% chance of having a miscarriage as well. So the chances of carrying a pregnancy in their late 40s through is fairly low. And then you really do, like I said, we have to be careful about what the effects of the mother the effects on the mother, which would be, you know, the two biggest ones, obviously, are diabetes and high blood pressure.
Outside of in vitro, there's nothing really medically going on that would change those numbers, is there?
No, not really. I mean, it's still, there's nothing, you know, we have more hormonal medications that we can use. We have more things that we can use to protect the mother for some of the concerns. And then the science as far as monitoring the baby is much more advanced. The ability to even do some surgeries prior to the child being born is even happening. So we have much more higher technology with ultrasounds and with blood tests to test for any chromosomal abnormalities as well.
Doc sent us a phenomenal list of medical myths. Myths and medicine. Remember, we were talking about this as well? We're going to run through these lightning round style when we come back after traffic. Mary's here with an update on that on 720 WGN.
Woke up after midnight, both my neck and arms were sore.
Back to Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. This is a great list you put together. Thank you for this.
Did you like that?
Yeah, this is tremendous. So let's run through these. These are medical myths. Stop spreading these, people. As a matter of fact, stop the spread. Wet hair causes colds.
You know, your mom always said that. Put a hat on. Wait till your hair dries before you go outside. You're going to catch your death of cold. You know, my grandma used to say that, and it couldn't be further from the truth. As a matter of fact, it's probably caused more deaths than it has protected. And mainly reason is that, you know, in the winter, you know, people say, don't go out with you're staying inside now. You're around people that are sick, so that you're going to get sick. The chance of you getting sick being outside in the cold with wet hair is zero. You're not going to see more viruses. Viruses are not attracted to wet hair, so don't worry about that one.
Plus, I can't speak to this anymore because my hair is very, very short where there is hair. Yeah. But if you have a full head of hair and your hair is wet, you go outside when it's super cold, you kind of get that crystallized hair thing. It's kind of cool. You can crunch your hair while you're driving. It's a good time.
Right.
Number two.
All right, I can probably speak to this because I used to think this way, Doc. Vaccines cause the flu and autism. Not the autism part, but the flu.
Yeah, so they can't cause the flu. They're dead viruses. They're not going to be resurrected and come to life in your body after you've gotten the vaccine.
You don't get the flu from the vaccine. You don't.
You don't. And probably the bigger one there is the autism one, and that's the one we really got to get across, which is so sad that in 1989, Andrew Wakefield put this, you know, article out in Lancet, and everybody rallied around it. And now we have spent so much money proving that that's not true, where that money could have been used to work for treatment of autism or more of a better diagnosis of autism. So very sad, but get your vaccinations. They're very important for your health.
Yeah, you anti-vaxxers, you have to understand that doctor that did this study that started, and Jenny McCarthy blew it up and has since retracted her statement, but frankly, it's too late. The damage has been done. And you need to spread the word amongst your friends and your friends that might have kids someday that it's nonsense. It's just absolute nonsense. As a matter of fact, Doc, there's parts of the world, you know this, where polio has made a resurgence because people aren't getting vaccinated.
Well, polio and measles, too. We have over 100,000 deaths in the world from measles. I mean, it's
ridiculous.
Amazing. Yeah.
Number three, reading in the dark, sitting close to the TV will cause you to go blind.
That will not. So if you remember, your mom probably, get back from the TV. It's going to cause you to go blind there. No, that won't. It's going to put some eye strain on you. It can give you a headache, but it's not going to have any long-term consequences on your vision. So don't worry about that one. And reading in the dark, again, it's almost the same as being up close. You're going to strain your eyes. You're going to have muscles that have to work a little bit harder with your eyes, but it's not going to have any long-term consequences on your vision.
How about you should drink at least 8 glasses of water a day?
Yeah, this one's kind of classic. You know, everyone hears this. It says, well, no one ever stopped and said, where did that come from? And that came from a study done in 1945 that said you should take in 2.5 liters of liquid in a day because that's how much your body is going to need. Well, what most people don't understand or don't realize is that the vast majority of water that you take in comes from your food, not from just glasses of water. So it's not like you're doing any harm by keeping those 8 glasses of water in your diet, but realize that you really don't need to because you're going to get a lot of water through your food, whether it's soups, even sandwiches, anything has a lot of water in it, and you're still going to get that amount of fluid that you need.
But it's not a bad idea to drink water. That's the point.
No, not at all. Not a bad idea at all. Nope.
You go swimming, you can't eat for an hour.
Yeah, you remember you'd be at a picnic and you want to jump in the lake and you're like, oh, no, you got to wait an hour. total falsehoods on that. You know, your parents would say, oh, all your blood rushes to your stomach to make sure that you digest the food. Although a portion of that is true, you do have an increased blood flow to your stomach when it's full. It is not going to be coming to a point where you're not going to have enough blood that's going to cause you to have cramps. So really, there's no history behind that at all. So I would not worry about that one.
Okay, this is one of my favorites. Eating chocolate, too much of it, could give you acne.
Yeah, and that's been a big one. You know, fried foods and chocolate are what causes acne, and that's not true at all. You know, acne is caused due to some hormones and oil glands that are going to produce something called sebum, and you get this sebaceous-like material. And it's really because the skin is clogged and you have increased hormone production. So it's more clean skin than it is going to be chocolate. And really, you can eat as much chocolate as you want, and you're not going to break out in any more acne than you would have had you not had that.
So no chocolate, no fried food problems related to acne. What if you took fried chicken and rubbed it on your skin?
Well, yeah, that could be a problem.
That's probably not a good idea.
For teen girls, what they often will do is they want to use more makeup because they think that that's going to, you know, at least hide some of the acne, when in fact that can make it worse because the makeup can actually block the pores and cause the increased blockage there.
Cracking your knuckles will give you arthritis?
It's not going to give you arthritis. You know, arthritis is classically, we've talked about this, it's an immune response, an immune disorder for the body. So it will make your joints more lax, so they'll be able to flex a little bit more, which is not often good. It could cause you injuries, but it's not going to cause you arthritis. May wear down your cartilage a little bit quicker, but it's not going to give you arthritis.
Not a great habit, but you're not going to get arthritis.
Yep.
How about coffee will sober you up quicker? Dave, read this.
Yeah.
Dave, coffee will sober you up quicker. Yeah. Pay attention to.
Yes, I am.
Probably not a great idea. As a matter of fact, a terrible idea. You know, we always think, oh, I'm going to have 2 cups of coffee. If you were drunk, 2 cups of coffee, all it's going to do is make you an alert drunk or a stimulated drunk.
That's fantastic.
It is not going to sober you up. So don't say, oh, I'm going to have a cup of coffees and drive home. Better off to not go home, take an Uber, or do something else. But that's one that coffee does not turn that around.
I can tell you from being around a lot of drunks during my formative years, you definitely want them more awake. Oh, they're such a good time. Starve a fever, feed a cold.
Yeah, you always hear that. What am I supposed to do? Starve a fever, feed a cold? Because it's fetus, you know, nobody ever knows what the one is. And to be honest with you, it's because neither one makes any sense. For both of those, you want to make sure that you have good nutrition while you're ill, because your body needs energy to help fight off the infection. You want to make sure you have fluids as well. The one thing I would say is people that take Tylenol and Motrin for their fever, you want to make sure you have something in your stomach, because the irritation of those medications in your stomach can cause you more harm. So the big thing when you're ill, still continue with the diet. You might take more soups because they feel good. You want to keep your fluids up because we lose fluid when we have a fever, but that's another one that's nonsense.
Let's see. Chewing gum stays in your stomach for 7 years?
Yeah, you know, you always heard that once you swallow gum. Well, it's going to be there for 7 years. You know, not true at all. Gum is not absorbed, so it passes through our digestive system just like any other fiber does that would not be absorbed. So it's not hanging on there. It's not that it's sticky and it's sticking to the side of your intestines. It clears through your body. You don't have to worry about, you know, filling your body up with gum.
And this is what I was guilty of. Eating late at night makes you gain weight faster.
Yeah, and you know, Andrea, that's a big one right now, because people really sit there and try to figure out, you know, is it what I'm eating, the timing that I'm eating causes me to gain weight? And no, it's still simple math, what you put in versus what you put out. So, you know, if you take in enough calories, but you exercise and walk and eat properly and do those things, you're not going to gain weight. Now, that being said, people that eat late at night, think about what they're eating. It's not like they're getting broccoli out and eating, right? They're going to White Castle, they're eating ice cream sundae, they're having that bag of Doritos, they're eating foods that are not good for you. So it's not like you eat and say, oh, all that's going to be absorbed because now I'm sleeping. No, the same amount of food would be absorbed. It's a matter of still calories in versus calories out for the day.
Yeah, and if you eat late and then you wake up the next day and you feel like crap, it's because you eat late.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thanks, Doc. Good stuff as always. And there are several red wine texters who appear to be sober, and that's not a myth. That does help in moderation.
Absolutely. Red wine in moderation, especially for females, is actually good for heart disease, and it's definitely one. And again, like you said, moderation. A glass, 2 glasses a day is fine, not a bottle a day.
All right. Moment of silence for Jordan Spieth's 12th hole, and I will talk to you later.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
The ethics of the issue are that the British Prime Minister failed to declare this interest. He's pontificated on it. He's made laws on it. He failed to declare the interest.
Uh-oh. I might be in trouble on that one.
Well, it's not been a great week. I know that I should have handled this better. I could have handled this better. I know there are lessons to learn, and I will learn.
And you know what they say about men with small hands? You can't trust them.
The trademark hair, the tan, an impassioned look, and a less than flattering depiction of his...
John Thomas.
He's just a little guy.
They are such liars. The worst.
He is a loathsome, offensive brute. Yet I can't look away.
John Thomas.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well done, well done. 7:13, my friend Paul Coy joins me now. And on top of the problems that Prime Minister David Cameron's having... Good morning, Paul.
Morning. How are you? Are you well?
Yeah, I'm fine. Fine. Congratulations on your Masters win. When I say you, I mean the whole of the UK.
Well, thank you very much. You know I masterminded the whole thing, don't you? You do know that.
Oh, did you watch it, by the way?
I did. It was unbelievable. I thought, you know, Spieth is going to walk away with it, and then all of a sudden, it all started going a little bit wobbly. And good old Danny, I just couldn't believe it. Were you surprised?
Yeah, stunned. But the thing is, Danny Willett deserves a lot of credit. You don't just shoot 67 because Spieth loses his mind. You shoot 67 because you're good. And it happened to happen on his wife's birthday, on the day his first child was supposed to be born. The child was actually born 10 days ago, on a Masters that he could have missed. There's a lot of cool storylines there. Nick Faldo, the last Brit to win it, as you know, Paul, 20 years ago.
Actually, it was a long time ago, last Englishman. And I don't know what they showed that on TV, though, where you were. The fact that I had a camera in his face while he was trying to FaceTime his wife. Did they show that?
Yeah, that was odd.
That's a bit strange, isn't it? And he's going, and he seemed quite cool about it. And it was like, but it's like, that was really bizarre. He's going, listen, I can't really talk right now because there's about 3 billion people around the world actually watching me talk to you. So I thought that was very odd. But yeah, very exciting. And everybody's very excited about it over here. So yeah, good for Danny.
Yeah.
Lovely fella.
Dan, now, did you know who he was prior to yesterday? Because you're a golf fan, but is he a big deal there?
No, he's not a big deal. Golf people would know who he was, but wouldn't know too much about him. He's just another pro golfer over here.
Right.
But certainly not a big deal to go out and win the Masters. I mean, it's an amazing story. And also, what's weird about that is that we don't usually do prep very well. I mean, as Brits, it doesn't matter what the sport is. We're never very good at holding a nerve. We always get a little bit wobbly to the end, and he's done completely the opposite.
Yeah,
that really has really thrown us.
Practically not even British. But congratulations, and congratulations as well to the Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, who beat Manchester United 3-0. First time you've beaten them at home in forever.
It's something like 18, 19 years. It's all getting very exciting. It's what is happening to our sport. I just don't know what's going on. It's whereas we'd all stumble and fall over and be terrible, now we're not only winning, but we're not apologizing for it either.
How about it?
Oh, I would like to apologize, obviously, for.
And what do we have, 5 or 6 games left in the season for the Spurs?
5 to go. Leicester City, who were 4,000-1. They were that far away from winning anything. I mean, everybody expected they were like going to be the worst team in the league, running away with it, and that really is the big sporting story over here, because it was just like the worst team in the league. There was no chance
Makes
they
no
were
sense.
Even going to stay up.
Makes no
and,
sense.
But that's tipsy, topsy, turvy game of football that it is.
Yeah. So the basically, if you break it down in our terms, Tottenham is 2.5 games out with 5 to play. So it's tough, but they could still do it. They need a lot of help, though.
Yeah.
So, all right, we'll come back. We'll talk about the hypocrite Prime Minister David Cameron. Can he be saved? And the British artist who painted a picture of Donald Trump so offensive, it won't be allowed into America. Have you seen some of the stuff we're offended by? Seriously, we're offended by this? Stand by, more with Paul Coit in just a moment. Paul is, of course, the ambassador to the program and our bureau chief in London. And he's also available for birthday parties and bar mitzvahs.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's my friend Paul Coit at Coity, C-O-Y-T-E-Y, all over social media. All right, so Paul, before we get to that weasel David Cameron.
Yes.
By the way, what a move this is. Cameron announcing new tax evasion laws this weekend at the end of that. I mean, he should have just said, and by the way, once these laws are instituted, I'll be in the Bahamas at one of my tax havens.
Or
you got to quit.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Wow. But before we get to that, do you know about this this painting, this Brit painting of Donald Trump naked?
Well, the thing is, you probably can't hear me squirming. Can you hear me squirming?
A little bit, a little bit.
I'm looking at the picture right now.
It's not good.
That's my squirming voice.
Yes, I can tell.
Most people think it sounds like a drunk voice, but it's actually my squirming voice. And I'm looking at it right now.
Yes, and the painting actually has a picture of Donald Trump's package and his micro unit.
Yeah, I think package is probably being generous. Maybe envelope, if you're going to talk about things that are wrapped up
How about
something.
Parcel?
Yeah, yeah,
parcel's
tiny.
Too big.
Tiny, yeah, parcel. Yeah, the postage. You didn't need much postage there.
The
person that painted this, do we know them?
Ilma Gorin, Amy. So just not really. No, it's not as if it's like some famous artist. But then, it's quite good, isn't it? I suppose. But does he wear that thing around his wrist?
I got to talk to you about your definition of quite good. Pat Brady's joining us in a few minutes on politics. Have you seen this painting?
Is this of the Donald?
Yeah, the naked picture of Donald.
No, God. Well, we see now.
Here you go, Pat.
Now we have the spouse and the principal that we've seen.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. It's just really not good. All right, so this artist is in trouble for painting this or not in trouble?
Well, not in trouble at all. I've just done it, and people looked at it and got, oh. God, the thing is, the weird thing is, as I look at it, I am still drawn to the hairstyle. I still get drawn away from where I'm supposed to look. It just shows what a remarkable do the man has, because it's still, I get drawn away to look at that. But now I'm looking down again, and I don't want to look at it anymore, thank you. Is he unhappy? Has he seen this?
Yes.
He's unhappy about it, is he?
Yeah, well, he's unhappy about everything. But in this case, I don't know how you could be happy about that, even if it is in London. All right, so let's move on to David Cameron here.
Please.
The prime minister who, from afar, from our vantage point, seemed like he was getting it done, seemed like he was doing a good job. What were his popularity numbers before last week?
Sorry, say that again. I lost you for a second.
How popular was he prior to the news of last week?
Listen, it's up and down. It's up and down. You can't exactly say he's incredibly popular because we've got this vote on Europe, which is coming up in a couple of months. So that's the talk of the town at the moment. He's saying we should stay in Europe. Lots of people saying we should get out of Europe. There was another story recently that he'd spent £6 million on getting leaflets and literature sent out to everybody saying that we should stay in Europe. And everybody's very upset that so much money's been spent on leaflets. We're not happy about anything. There's always something to moan about.
So when the Panama Papers news comes out that Cameron's father, who is apparently a successful businessman, had arranged all of these tax shelters for his clients.
Yes.
And that Cameron, in fact, profited from them. How does the guy still have his job?
Well, then he did profit against them, and then he sold them before he became prime minister. I mean, the web of this. It's Mossack Fonseca. Yeah, you're familiar with the Mossack Fonseca, aren't you?
That's where I have my tax shelters, through that company.
Exactly. I know you have Mossack Fonseca. Yeah. So it's all to do with that. And I was looking through it, and it's just a web of confusion. And there was also inheritance tax that he managed to avoid through that, through when his father died, that there was £300,000. It's just numbers and confusing and Panama and this and that. And it's just, I don't know. Does it throw you? Does it confuse you in any way?
I don't think you want to be in the same conversation with Vladimir Putin's cellist and the former prime minister of Iceland.
Yeah, but there's millions. I think there's like
one and a half million files.
Right.
Apparently everybody's in there. Everybody's in there somewhere.
Yeah, you know who else is in there? It's Lionel Messi.
Lionel Messi is in there? I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a very rich man.
Yeah.
You know what? And it wouldn't be surprised. There's so many files and people and things that are appearing every day. There'll be more. I'm sure there will be more.
Well, assuming Cameron steps down, who is his replacement? Because I would suggest you guys take Trump.
Well, this is what we're thinking about. I mean, the Trump thing was a possibility until the picture came out that we discussed earlier, which now has thrown everything
He's
all over the
it.
Shop. So the likelihood of him becoming prime minister, because David Cameron is known not to look like that, which is one of the reasons he got in the first place.
It's a beautiful thing, not the Trump picture. Any other questions for Paul?
Paul, I just want to know, is Cameron denying any of this? Because he did. I know he did the backtracking where he was talking about the inheritance, you know, both from his mother and his father, and saying, well, this isn't really the same thing as your income, per se. But he's doing some serious backtracking, it seems. Or backpedaling, I should say.
Well, of course, because it's like any politician. He will answer a completely different question than he gets asked. So he'll go off around the houses and then come back. And then when it looks like, there's the proof of that, there'll be a little bit more backtracking, and then there'll be a bit more forward tracking and a bit more sidetracking. It's just far too much tracking for my liking, and there will be more backtracking in the future. And by the way, nice use of the word per se. I always like to hear that in a question.
Yeah, actually, well done by both of you.
Does the Queen have a say, per se?
Does the Queen have a say? No, the Queen's tax shelters are much more well hidden.
Yeah. Well, you think, someone's going to get to bowl in the most?
So much news out of your country. I also forgot to congratulate you on the Queen Mother's refrigerator, which celebrated its 60th anniversary last week.
Is that a person or is that a thing? What is that?
No. The actual refrigerator,
that's
Queen.
The person that's kept her. What? She's actually frozen. They kept her frozen, no. And it's a person that's being paid by the royal family to keep her frozen?
No, that's not true. No, the Queen Mother. The Queen Mother bought a refrigerator 60 years ago for some castle she owned somewhere, and it's still running.
That's wonderful news. That'll warm the cockles of your heart. Well, obviously it doesn't warm because it's a refrigerator, but if it was a heater, it would warm you more than the refrigerator would, which is supposed to keep you cold.
I don't even know where your cockles are. Wait, there they are in the Trump picture.
Well, he's been refrigerated by the look of that picture, so there's something else.
All right, and Texter says, I'd like to hire Paul for my birthday. I just want him to call all of my guests wobbly buggers. You know, next time you're on, we need to do that. We haven't done this in a long time, where we take requests from listeners of words they'd like to hear Paul say.
No, yeah. I enjoy that very much. Yeah. You know I do.
We'll do that next time. Thank you, Paul.
Okay.
Reporting live from London, he's Paul Coit. And,
thank you.
At Coitey, C-O-Y-T-E-Y. Follow him on social media. We're back after this.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
No, I've won 21 or 22 states. He's won half that number, maybe less than half that number. I've won, here's what's important, which they don't even count because it's a crooked system, folks. It's a crooked system. And in all fairness, take a look at what's happening to Birdie. He wins, he wins, he wins, he wins. And I hear he doesn't have a chance. This is a crooked system, folks. This is a crooked. I'm not a fan of Bernie. I couldn't care less. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I couldn't care less about Bernie. But he wins, and he wins like me. I've won twice as much as Cruz. I've won millions and millions of votes more. People that have never voted are coming out to vote for Trump.
He's so charming. He's just the best. Pat Brady's here from Next Generation Strategies. How are you, man?
Morning. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. All right. So this is an important topic because the voting public, who has turned out in record numbers for the primary, I don't think understands the system. And why would they?
No. And it sounds complicated, but it's not really. But let's start from the very beginning. These are political parties. They're private entities. The Constitution, due process, whatever, doesn't apply. These are private parties that are determining themselves how they are going to elect their nominee. And you've seen the systems here. You could probably set it up so the beer pong winner wins the nomination. It doesn't matter. You can set up whatever.
State by state.
State by state.
The people most involved make the rules.
Make the rules. And, for example, in Illinois, when Donald Trump came here in Illinois, there were two votes. You voted for him on the presidential preference ballot. And then in each congressional district, the 18 congressional districts, you voted for delegates that would support, ran on Trump's slate.
Right.
Well, what the Donald hasn't done, and we talked about this in Iowa and we talked about this in New Hampshire. He never ran a traditional campaign. I mean, it's particularly in New Hampshire. He didn't have any people on the ground. He'd jet in, give a speech, get a bunch of earned media, and jet out, and he won. And everybody's scratching their head, how's that going to work? Well, the reality is that the chickens are coming home to roost now. He has no game there. And stay with me for a second here. But right in the last couple weeks, we've had these state party conventions.
Yeah.
So when he went into a state and won, he won a certain amount of pledged delegates, and then there were some delegates that were at-large delegates. Well, the state parties choose those at-large delegates. So when we go to the convention in July, he needs to get 1,237 delegates to win.
Right.
Typically, you would have those delegates lined up well before the convention. Trump is not going to have 1,237 committed delegates when we go to the convention. He's probably going to have 1,130, 1,140. So if he doesn't win on the first round, which he won't, all these delegates that have been chosen by the state parties throughout the country, like we saw this weekend,
right,
aren't going to vote for him. So he will not win on a second vote. So, and I know that's a tortured explanation.
Well, not at all, because what I'm hearing from you, and this is the thing that I don't think Trump knows. I don't think Trump knew any of this. I don't think that, you know, he hired, what's his name the other day, the guy that's been around forever, the Republican operative,
yeah,
to run his convention business. The guy's running his campaign at this point. But he hired that guy to, very late to the game, get a ground game going, because I think he thought, like most people who vote in primaries thought, whoever wins a primary wins the delegates. There's no further discussion. But in many, 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 many states, there's a confirmation process that's secondary, so the state party bosses can protect themselves and make sure they're sending the winner they want to the convention. But that's not new. So no. For Trump to say it's unfair is ridiculous, because that's the system.
Exactly. It's been around since the 1880s in variations, and that's what the Democrats are doing. That's why Bernie will win, because today we just heard Jeff Weaver say that Hillary won't have the pledged delegates, but she will have the super delegates. But another point is, it's the obligation of the delegates to the convention, the 2,500, to choose the nominee that they think can actually win in November. So that's what it's going to come down to. So it might be Ted Cruz, it might be John Kasich, it might be somebody else. But for Trump to get up and say it's a rigged game, you know, he's lying, and he certainly didn't read the rules, and he certainly didn't prepare like Ted Cruz and the other candidates did.
And this is why, when you have a guy who is such a narcissist that he doesn't listen to anybody, had a very small operation of campaign people and a campaign manager who wasn't close to skilled enough to run a big-time campaign.
And never done it.
Yeah, had never done it. And that's why all of this fell through the cracks.
Yeah, it was a Kardashian campaign. He didn't have any. It was
point.
A Twitter. Earn media. That's why, I'm not spending any money. Well, you should be spending money, because you need this ground game. Like in Indiana over the weekend, virtually every delegate they've chosen, they haven't even had their primary yet, is someone that won't vote for Donald Trump on the second ballot.
So do you have to, beyond winning the primaries, do you have to have people on the ground in those states who know the party bosses, taking them out for dinner and telling them why your guy's the guy and calling in favors and doing whatever?
Yeah.
Is it that old school hand-to-hand?
Well, I'm not sure on the buy-in, the dinners or whatever, but there are organizations within states, and you get to the top of the organization and they're going to present a slate to the party rank and file, and that's how it's done. So the suggestion that somehow the people in the party, the grassroots, aren't being heard, or that the system's not fair, is just ridiculous. This is the way it's been done forever. It's just more visible this time, because we're going to have an open convention, which we haven't had truly since 48, I think.
Now, because of the fact that people do feel like their vote doesn't count in a circumstance like this, when we come back on the other side of traffic, I want to ask you if you think the system will change. Not in Illinois. We've got it all figured out here. 747, Mary's back with your traffic first on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel at 810 this morning. Before we get to any of that and get back with our friend Pat Brady from Next Generation Strategies, Paul Ryan, is he a candidate? There's a commercial that ran. See what you think.
What really bothers me the most of politics these days is this notion of identity politics, that we're going to win an election by dividing people rather than inspiring people on our common humanity and our common ideals and our common culture, on the things that should unify us. We all want to be prosperous. We all want to be healthy. We want everybody to succeed. We want people to reach their potential in their lives. Now, liberals and conservatives are going to disagree with one another on that. No problem. That's what
this is all about. So let's have a battle of ideas. Let's have a contest of whose ideas are better and why our ideas are better.
Does the Speaker of the House, Pat Brady's here, does the Speaker of the House run stuff like that, commercials like that, unless he's like sort of laying the groundwork?
Here's the deal. He was in town a couple weeks ago, and he gave, a great speech. And I'm a Kasich 100%, but Paul Ryan is one of the most impressive public servants and a nice guy that I've ever met. But what he said at the fundraiser here was that the House needs to start articulating the conservative principles and how they can help people in America before the campaign tees up, because it's too late. So maybe that's part of that strategy, that he needs to get out and be a messenger for the conservative.
Well, it kind of works on both levels, though, right?
Yes.
Because it does work for that purpose, but it also works to set his Morning in America sort of agenda.
Well, listen to that commercial or watch that commercial. That's the best commercial I've seen from a Republican.
Well, yeah.
Certainly just the opposite of what we heard from the guy from New York.
Yeah. Well, Trump's commercials basically go like this. You suck unless I win.
I'm getting screwed. I've never seen whines like, God, he whines all the time. Anyway.
So here's the deal. People go out and they vote in the primary in record numbers when normally they would ignore the primary like a trip to the dentist. And now they find out, because of the amount of coverage that exists today, that their vote is not the final vote on the candidate. I don't expect voters to know this, but because of the uproar that's gone on, will the system change or will this be yesterday's news?
I'm not sure if the system will change. I mean, we live in a republic. It's not a straight democracy, and the same thing for the Republican and the Democrat Party. You elect representatives to go cast their votes for what's in the best interest of the Republican Party. I'm not sure if that will change, but I think what might change is I'm hoping that we go, and both sides go to regional primaries. So we have 4 or 5 big primaries, and this thing's over, and it doesn't drag into July. And states like, with all due respect to my buddies, the smaller states don't get the prominence that don't necessarily represent the electorate that they get right now.
So because we can't get anything done on a federal level and we can't get a budget done in Illinois, how do we break up the rules, the old boy network, if there is such a thing? How do we break that up for the good of the people?
Here or federally?
Generally.
Here, there's outsized influence by public sector unions that fund the Democrats and the trial lawyers. You need to break that up, and you need to get term limits. You can't have people in Springfield for 45 years. Federally, the gridlock goes back to the map. And in 2010, when the Republicans had huge wins, they drew the legislative maps for the congressional districts, and this country is really polarized. There aren't too many contested elections in the primaries or even the generals. So we get a Congress that's very polarized, but that can be overcome by good leadership. And when you hear a guy like Paul Ryan or a guy like John Kasich speak, you go, well, maybe these guys can actually get something done.
It seems now that people are starting to come to the conclusion, and I don't want to get too far ahead of here, but starting to come to the conclusion that, well, the guy actually has to do the job, and maybe Trump's not the guy for that. Are you feeling that?
Well, he can't even run his own campaign. I remember when President Obama won, one of the things they cited because his thin resume was, well, look at the campaign he ran. Fair argument, because they did run a great campaign, but Trump can't even run a campaign.
I have to ask you, Pat, we were talking, actually the big story at 7:30, Bernie Sanders now saying, well, the Democrats should have an open convention too. That's not possible, is it?
No, and he's doing the same thing Trump's doing. Follow the rules, and he's going to win because he's going to have the pledged delegates in the superdelegates. And people need to, once again, understand these are party events. These aren't protected by the Constitution or governed by the Constitution. They're party events. There's all kinds of parties that are going to be on the ballot, and this is how they're selected. So it's just been a lot longer and more painful process than I've ever been through, but hopefully for Republicans, we'll get a good result in July. And Hillary's going to be the nominee of the Democrats, and as I heard today from a never Trump guy, Hillary could beat Trump from a prison cell.
Well, it might come to that. No, well, actually, Obama this weekend said the Justice Department, I believe the phrasing was, I guarantee you the Justice Department will not protect Hillary.
I agree with him. And having worked there, I think if the president meddled in a decision like that, it'd be an impeachable offense. But I will say this, if she's actually, as a former Fed myself, going to speak with the FBI director and her lawyers, I'm sure she has the best lawyers in the world, say it's okay. I don't think she's in any jeopardy.
One last thing in regards to the Democrat side. Bill Clinton lost his mind a little bit in a speech last week in regards to defending the crime bill, the landmark crime bill in the mid-90s, and whether or not it hurt black folks or didn't. Is he a liability for her going forward, or is he someone that really is still popular and ought to be treated that way?
I think he's a rock star amongst the Democrats, but boy, he sure irritated the African-American community. That's a dog whistle, to use that language, because, and we all lived through it in the 90s, we needed stronger laws, stronger criminal laws, but they overshot the mark. And a lot of people were going to jail forever for drug offenses, and disproportionately African-Americans. I think Hillary was smart over the weekend to say just that. We had a problem. We did too much. Now we need to fix it. But Bill using those words, man, that really irritated a lot of people. So he should probably stay home for a while.
Is that what they're going to do?
I don't know. They locked him up last time. Remember in 08 after South Carolina, they sent him home. But he's made 4 or 5 unforced errors. But he's the guy, you know, they love him.
And he's a phenomenal campaigner most of the time. So I would think, you know, if you blew this up intentionally or not intentionally, but if you blew this up unintentionally, who's better at fixing that problem politically than the guy who lied to our faces for all those years? Come on.
Yeah. The thing is, from campaigning, if you're not doing it every day, all day with the microphones in your face and giving the speeches, you tend to make more mistakes.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I also see it this way. He's getting older. He was the president of the United States. And he doesn't care what you think to some extent. He's going to tell you what he needs to tell you to protect his agenda. I still think he's a better politician than she'll ever be.
Well, they're at cross paths or cross purposes.
Right.
She's got to explain this thing and welfare reform, and he's trying to defend it. So it might be smart down the road to he's better at the big convention speech and get him off.
Well, you know she's going to lock him out of the Oval Office anyway.
Is that going to be the funniest? He's running the intern program, right?
Hillary, let me in. Hillary, I got some ideas. Let me in. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you later.
Anytime. See you guys. Thanks.
Right. That's Pat Brady, who, by the way, is dressed up today. Is he doing another show or something?
Biffy, I know.
He must be doing another show. Is he doing Eric and Kathy?
He's doing TV.
I got to talk to
my probation officer at 10.
Okay, well, good luck with that. Minute before 8, Mayor Emanuel coming up, 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
Driving to work this morning or just driving around the city? And why wouldn't you be? 8 o'clock on a Monday morning, just driving around the city. Are there a lot of bikes on the street?
There are quite a few. I love to bike. I don't bike to work. I just use the recreational bike path along the lakefront. But now they're installing so many of these bike lanes. Throughout the city, you've probably noticed them.
Over the next 3 years, including 9 miles of new lanes this year, Mayor Emanuel joins us now to talk about this. Are you on your bike now?
No.
Okay.
You?
No. Yeah, I'm on a stationary bike while I do the show. All right, so I was looking at this artist rendering, and I'm confused by this. The bike lane that I'm looking at, it looks like it's on the other side of the bus stop. Am I nuts, or what am I looking at here?
I don't know. You know, maybe we got to get you some bifocals, brother. I don't know. You want me on a radio interview by telephone and tell you what you're looking at?
Well, listen, you're the mayor of Chicago. If you can't figure out what I'm looking at, I don't know.
Here's the deal. You're looking at what we now call better protected bike lanes. It's kind of a buffer.
Got it.
Where rather than just kind of a separate lane, we have it divided. So the biker has their own area, not near car traffic, cars, buses, separate lanes, and that allows everybody to move along without getting into each other. And it's safer, secure, and expeditious. In Chicago, you know, I just crossed Milwaukee Avenue. You know, it's one of the most biked streets in America for commuters using bikes to go to work.
I don't know. Milwaukee Ave?
Yeah. Yeah. Milwaukee Avenue, one of the most in America.
I did not know that.
A lot of people now, you know, it's another mode we have. It's interesting, a little known fact. More people used to take buses just 5 years ago. Now more people take trains. More people are obviously biking to work using it. And there are people, developers asking for divvy stations in front of their office buildings because it's become a mode, a more regular form of transportation. And so we added... And I made a pledge, first term, 100 miles because of the increasing traffic. It was already happening. We're going to do 50 more. We've moved into the second best biking city in America, according to magazines. And it's, you know, people are going to bike to work, and we need to make sure it's safe and secure. Bikers have to follow the rules. Just because you're on a bike, you don't get to flaunt them. But we're going to get separate lanes, so car traffic and bikers can use the same road without getting in each other's way.
Well, and that's the thing. I like the separation of the lanes because it cuts down on the chance of bike slash car rage or somebody turning right and hitting a biker, all the stuff we run into all the time. And also the bikers doing what you're talking about, zipping between cars in the middle of the street.
Can I tell you one other added benefit? Ever since we've added these bike lanes, Chicago's tech economy has taken off. And the reason the first bike lane, protected bike lane I did is right on Kinsey, right behind the merchandise market.
Yep.
And that's now turned into one of the great tech spaces for tech companies.
Sure, 1871.
And 1871 is there, but a lot of companies have moved in. And so it's not only safe, more people are going to use it, but it's actually been a economic engine for really driving the burgeoning tech scene here in the city of Chicago. They are complementary, given that the workforce that works in the tech space, digital space, really likes it. So there's economic benefit, safety, and it's, you know, in with Divvy and with all the other contributions, the protected bike lanes allow Chicago to people to take trains, drive, bike, whatever they walk, run, whatever they want to work. And as you noted, just a little earlier, we're going to separate bikers and runners on Lakeshore Drive.
I like the path. Yeah, I was going to ask you about the path that you're extending, well, that the city is extending a little bit westward.
The mayor's doing it. He's doing it by hand himself.
He's out there, right?
He's got a tool belt.
By Navy Pier, because that area was always so congested, it was crazy dangerous.
The flyover.
Yeah.
The flyover. So that's going to be finished in about 2 years, but what we're now doing on 31st to 51st and Fullerton to Oak, there'll be literally a separate bike path from a separate running path, and you won't have to hear on your left.
Okay, the one on 18th Street, though, with the poles, that to me always seemed a little dangerous, those plastic poles. Are those going to go away?
Here's what I'm going to do. You and I are going to go on a separate bike, city bike tour.
Okay,
we're going to get on our bike, okay?
Let's do it.
That's a great idea.
And we will see, there's kind of three variations. The better lanes, which has kind of a sidewalk separation.
Yep.
Protected ones, which you just noted, has a kind of barrier, and then just one that is kind of a painted, as you know, green a path. And so the better ones are, I think, give people, which are going to be the next 50 miles, the kind of protection and separation that we're looking for.
By the way, one other bike note, which is good, and I think you can tell, I don't know if this is your program or not, but the city seems to have been backing a bike mechanic after school program for kids that the state no longer funded. Is that happening?
Yeah, yesterday, it was interesting. I was at a community breakfast meeting with Alderman Villegas, and the people from Community Action mentioned this Bike and Roses. It was a company started by kids from Prosser High School, also one in Albany Park, different high school kids. And they had state funding, and the state budget pulled it. And it was, they were employing 50, 60, 75 kids who were doing bike mechanic skills and would go out into kind of markets and also set up shop. So we have a big summer jobs program, 25,000 kids, largest in the history. There's a piece of it called green technology. And so we accelerated, got him a grant for this summer and under that area because it's learning green technology, bikes, no emissions. And we're going to fund it to make up for the loss in the state, lack of a budget, lack of investment. And these kids learn. This beautiful young girl from Prosser yesterday introduced me at the event. She's at Prosser. Did not know how to ride a bike just a few years ago, is now a bike mechanic, and is on her way to UIC to become a pediatrician.
That's fantastic.
And this is the type of thing we should invest in. It was ridiculous. And when I heard the story, I said, look, we'll take care of it. But, you know, and so it's like $100,000, 75 kids are going to be bike mechanics this summer.
That's a very cool story. By the way, what do we need to do to get you and the governor back together? You used to be friends. I want to hear you two singing Reunited. We need you to like each other.
You want the band back together?
Yeah, let's put the band back together. I'll be, you know what? Remember Henry Kissinger? I'll be Henry Kissinger to you two.
Okay, well, that would be good, Steve. I'm always ready to work with the governor. As I said in the past, if you want to work on workers' compensation reform, I did it in 2011. We passed it. I'm ready to help. I'm ready to help on areas where, I mean, I'm not going to work on right to work legislation because I don't agree with that. And I never have. But worker comp reform, I agree. I want to see a funding for Chicago Public Schools and poor children across the state where we stop penalizing poor kids because they're poor. We have school districts, wealthy school districts, with reserves and surpluses because of the way the state 20 years ago used to fund education. We now, poor kids in Chicago, let me just tell you something. Chicago leads the state now in high school graduation and growth. Chicago leads the state now in growth in math and reading scores,
right,
where the state actually is declining. These are poor kids doing exceptional things on education, yet our state penalizes them twice for being poor. They don't fund their teachers' pensions, where they fund every other teacher's pension, and because they're poor, they're actually held back by the state funding problem. It's not the governor's fault. He inherited it like I inherited problems. Try to fix it. I will work with him in a shared mission to reform and fund education where we help poor kids who are actually doing exceptionally well in education.
Well, good.
The state should not be doubling down on their difficulties.
No, and what you just said is cool. That's the first step. So next thing you know, we're going to be over at, we're going to go get some pancakes.
Yeah.
And then Andre's going to come by with her bike.
Yep.
And we're going to get this together. We'll be singing Reunited by the end of the day.
I'll probably do some oatmeal rather than pancakes. Is that okay?
Yeah, I know. Mr.
What are you, I'm going to give you that. You know what I have to do every morning?
Is this the swimming thing again?
I swim, but my wife makes, when the kids are gone, we share together, she makes a kale smoothie. I have to drink kale in the morning. Okay.
Dave Ennett just lit up.
Oh,
Dave, Dave Ennett's favorite thing is kale.
You're singing my tune, Mr. Mayor.
Oh my God, this is like. And my wife goes, "We have, you know, kale, berries, or whatever."
Oh.
I said, "Amy, please," and she goes, "No, we have to do this." And it's like I feel like the first thing in the morning, rather than have breakfast, I get to have medicine.
You know what I told Ennett? I said, "Just go out."
No, I'm going to probably get a letter from some kale association.
No. Listen, you're entitled to not eat that stuff or not drink it, but not unless your wife tells you. But you go out in the median right here. You and Dave could just gnaw on some of the stuff in the median here because that's sort of like kale.
I just want you to know we actually grow kale in our backyard. Okay.
See?
Oh no, Dave! See? You know the Dave, stalkers that come by.
There's your breaking Dave, news,
Dave. Dale, yeah. Dave, do you like kale?
I do.
Okay, that's it. I'm bringing you kale from the Emmanuel Garden this summer because then it means I don't have to have it for breakfast. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Dave's going to
thank you, Mr. Mayor. Enjoy the day. Thank you, sir. All right, so there you go. Mayor Emmanuel now is going to bring you kale from his own private collection.
Dave, you can come on our bike tour.
See, how different was that from Senator Durbin, who ripped me for eating kale?
Okay, but let's just be clear what the mayor said, because, you know, politics, we want to be clear.
I know. He didn't like,
let's be clear. What like he said
it. He wants to get
like
rid of it.
He was being punished, right. So he wants to do a kale okay. dump on you.
All right.
I like how he's getting all of us involved in the show. You're going on swimming with him.
Yeah.
Andre's going biking. Dave's eating kale with him.
Yeah. This next thing awesome. You know, he's going to be napping with you in a parking lot.
Oh.
821, Dean next, 720 WGM.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah,
Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. You sounded left out when the mayor said he was going to bring some homegrown kale for Dave. So I'm growing some stuff in my backyard that I'll bring for you.
Hey, that's not kale.
I don't know about the nutritional benefits, but I promise you won't have glaucoma.
This is the Wintrust. Well, it's legal. It's medical. This is the Wintrust Community Banks Hour and the James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare Center sponsors Dean on the show business stuff. And I didn't see any clips, highlights, anything from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Did everything go as planned for Cheap Trick?
Everything went as planned for everybody, apparently. There were no clips because HBO has the rights to the video.
Yep.
They're going to show it on April the 30th. There were some still pictures that were released over the weekend, but Chicago was inducted without a hitch. You know, all of, you know, the current band, the original guys were all there, along with the daughter of the late Terry Kath, which was fantastic. Drummer Danny Serafin was also part of the induction. He gave a F-bomb filled speech, but was passion filled, you know, and talked about the camaraderie. They acknowledged Peter Cetera, who wasn't there. I told you about all the there's just an ego-filled mess of why he declined their invitation to be part of it.
You said an F-bomb filled speech by a member of Chicago?
The former drummer, Danny Serafin. I mean, the whole ceremony itself.
It doesn't seem to go with Chicago music. Saturday in the effing park.
If you
I wish it was the effing 4th of July.
This was, you know, they're rock and rollers. So,
don't tempt Dean, okay? There's already been a.
Yeah, that's
issue.
True. That's true. I'm already known for my filthy mouth.
If you leave me now, go fly an effing kite and get away from me.
Color my effing world.
That doesn't make sense to me.
With love.
Now, there's a bit of a kerfuffle. Which I believe was Cheap Trick's last album, with Cheap Trick and the drummer, too, right? And the original drummer?
Their former drummer, who is no longer with the band. But he was there. This is an example. As I understand it, the current band, the originals, Rick Nielsen, Robin Zander, and Tom Peterson, not of WGN fame, a completely different Tom Peterson, those guys apparently don't get along with their former drummer, whose name is escaping me right now. He's no longer in the band. Rick Nielsen.
Bunny. Bunny.
It's an unusual name.
Yeah, it's Bunny.
Bon. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. Bunny.
Rabbit.
Bunny Wabbit.
Rick Nielsen's drummer, son is now the drummer in the band. But they all, put whatever differences they have aside. And they were there because the band was being honored, which was, it was very nice. They performed. They did bunch of their big hit songs, as did Chicago. In fact, the only inductee that did not perform was NWA. They were there to accept the award.
And there's the F-bombs.
There is where you expect your F-bombs to be dropped. Not from just you and me. Simple and effing free.
All right, before we run out of time, box office this weekend, were you surprised to see a less than average Melissa McCarthy movie knock Batman and Superman out?
It knocked it out by a couple of $100,000. It barely made it into the top spot. Happy for Melissa McCarthy. You know, I like her very much. Despite all the bad reviews, it did wind up being number one, and Batman Superman drops to the number three spot. MTV Music Movie Awards were last night. Star Wars took the top spot. They took like three awards, something like that, last night. So
I didn't even know that was still a thing.
That was it's still a thing. Dwayne the Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart hosted the whole thing, and I'm sure they'll be repeating it about every 10 minutes on MTV, where you still can't find a music video.
No. If you find a music video on MTV or VH1, the world is coming to an end.
Yeah, you're on the wrong channel.
What kind of business do you think they're in? Yeah. Thanks, buddy. That's Dean. And Andre Darlis, that'd be you.
Yes.
Ready to rock with a big story?
I am. By the way, it's Bun E. Carlos.
Bunny. Bunny Carlos.
Bunny Carlos.
Bunny Carlos.
The Steve Cochran Show.
We continue the Wintrust Community Banks Hour. Coming up, Adrian Haslett Davis with a great story about her and the Boston Marathon, you gotta hear.
Out here in the fields, I fight for my meals. I get my back into my living.
Coach Joel Quenneville brought to you by Hooters.
I don't need to fight.
America's wing experience. Hawks and Blues, what's the schedule again?
It starts Wednesday night, Game 1 in St. Louis at 8:30. We'll have our pregame at 8 o'clock here on WGN. Then Friday, it'll be a 7 o'clock start in St. Louis. Game 3 Sunday afternoon at the United Center at 2. Game 4 Tuesday the 19th at the United Center at 8:30. And then Games 5, 6, and 7 still TBA.
At 8:40, we go to Coach Q now. Congratulations. Here we go again. Another playoff run. I'm sure you're getting tired of this.
Oh, we love this time of year. So we're all excited. It doesn't seem like it takes a while to get here. And I thought we had a nice regular season here, put ourselves in a real good spot. And, we got a great test right out of the gate. But certainly, you can feel playoffs are here. I think everybody's going to be really excited about starting on Wednesday and looking forward to the next couple of days preparing for it as well.
the pressure is always there. It doesn't matter which game it is, but I really always feel like the pressure's on the other team, because until you beat the champs, you're not the champs, and everybody's got something to prove when they play the Blackhawks.
Well, I think that we find that out right off the bat when we start the season. I think everybody's going to be ready for us, and I think we got to be ready for St. Louis, and I think that we have to be at our best to beat that team. And I think everybody's going to be delivering their best, and I always find the first round's the toughest round to get through anyways, and so we're going to have our hands full, but I think, I think we prepared over the last little while. We've got some guys coming in here fresh as well, so, let's go.
Look, this team's not a one-trick pony. It's probably deeper than it's ever been. But without Duncan Keith in game one, you get game one. They're in bad shape, aren't they?
Well, it's a game that would be nice to go in there. And, on the road, you always say when you start on the road, you like to get a split. And, we're going in there. We'd love to win game one. And you go from there. And without Dunks, you're going to be missing a lot of key minutes and important minutes, so we're looking for some guys to jump up and take advantage of more ice time and more quality ice time as well. And they're going to have some tougher matchups too, so it's a we'll get to find out, but these guys have been exposed to that a couple times over the course of the year, and none bigger than the chance they're going to have to prove in a game one.
I know you'd like to have home ice. The reality is that last year you only had home ice for one of your series in the postseason. So is it safe to say maybe this team handles that a little better than some teams do?
I don't think it bothers us. I know that we feel we play pretty well the same way, home and away. We love the fact that when we're at home, we love to take advantage of their surroundings. And around the league this year, I thought home ice wasn't that big of an advantage. And you look at the number of teams, success on the road, teams find a way. Most teams have four lines that can play against anybody, and I think that's a key when you're on the road. And I think that the matchups, when we got balance in our lines, we like that. So we feel we're never going to be exposed against the upcoming matchups as well. So I think you can, and most teams are like that nowadays. That you got top two lines that probably score more, and a couple lines that are more responsible defensively with not the same offense. And I think that's basically how you want to play in the playoffs anyways. You want to be checking first, and knowing St. Louis plays a kind of a tight game, and we expect that in every game we're going to be playing here.
Going back to Saturday night, Joe, you happy with what you saw from Crawford?
Yes, I'm so glad he got the work in. I think that's going to help him immensely going forward here. He got a couple more days here in practice as well, so I think that seeing the pucks, getting back in the real time, and getting exposed to playing a real game, I think that's that was needed, and it was good to get it going in the regular season before going.
When you've had success against a team in the postseason, I mean, you've had this with Minnesota, where you've been matched up with them and you've come out on top. Last time you played St. Louis, you went in there, they beat you twice in overtime in games one and two, and then you won the last four games of the series. How much does that get into a team's head?
You don't know. I think it's, I think that St. Louis is, they put themselves in a spot where they had a good regular season, and they're going to measure their whole success on what gets accomplished in the playoffs. And I think every team's like that. And I think we find that once we get into the series, you get into it a little bit deeper, and we feel that we seem to rise to the challenge when the games get bigger. And we hope that we start great in the series and get better as well, but I don't think we have that luxury of the thinking that we're going to get better later. I think we got to make sure that we're going to be good right from the start against a team like St. Louis, who's going to be well prepared, and they usually start fast in games, and we saw last time when we played them, they had a 2-0 lead on them. We can't expect being down 2-0 that it's going to be easy.
Brian Elliott in goal for them has had a tremendous regular season, but he has struggled in the playoffs. Tarasenko is a playoff beast, so you got a guy that needs to prove something in the playoffs, and Tarasenko needs to keep it going. Other than those two guys, where's your focus?
They have about three lines that can all score. They're deeper right now offensively on all their lines, more balance. And that's where they're deeper. I think they've added some size on the back end. They're very mobile. Their deer are very active, exiting the zone, off the points in the offensive zone. They got good patience with the puck. They got a real tight gap. They check probably or positionally aware more than any team in the league. So they play a real strong technical game. Not going to give up much. Can't get frustrated playing that kind of game. And be patient ourselves. And but they're deeper than we've seen in the past. And more options, particularly offensively.
What'd you see from Crawford Saturday night?
Good to see him get some action. And seeing pucks and, feeling the traffic around him and getting that pace back, I think that was a great bonus for us, knowing that throwing him in there for the first playoff game without playing any or getting any action would have been tough on him.
I just realized that Dave Enn had already asked you about Crawford because...
Yeah, okay, good.
Okay, here's the deal. Thanks for the coverage, by the way. But, you know, we tell the truth on this show. But here's the deal. Dave asked him about Crow, and I was covering another point in the show with Sandberg.
Is that what you
producer
were?
Sandberg,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're talking about something, and this is a pet peeve of mine when people don't listen who work on the show, and I just blew it. You know what I did? I Jordan Spieth.
Oh, you're going to get it all day now.
I Jordan Spieth that.
You just walked into a left and a right there.
I did. I Jordan Spieth that. I laid a big hairpiece over it.
Coach, I was going to ask you about Crawford, what you thought of him.
Yes, Dave. Dave, go ahead and ask him something I can re-ask him.
I would like to ask you. I mean, we knew this was coming, but it was official as of last night when the regular season ended. Patrick Kane wins the Art Ross Trophy, 106 points.
Good for him.
This season. Just your thoughts on the year that he's had, because it's just been amazing.
He has been unbelievable all year and started off at an unbelievable pace and sustaining it all year long with a lot more attention and scrutiny and line coverages and knowing that the team's plan was that you got to stop them and they were following him around a little bit, but his elusiveness and his consistency and he was tremendous all year and really helped our power play. All areas of our game, our offensive production. Early on in the year when we didn't have much going on, that line kept us in the mix of winning games. And you can't say enough positive things about the year he had, MVP year. And happy for him. And it was a real big part of our team having the positioning all year where we didn't have to battle to get in the playoffs at the end.
We were talking earlier this morning about the Spieth thing in the Masters. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did. It was
hard to watch.
Entertaining theater.
Yeah, it was hard to watch, though. And, you know, I was thinking about hockey, because you know I love hockey. I don't think there's time to have what amounts to a choke amongst the regular skaters. I mean, if you're going to see somebody melt down like that, it's probably a goalie, because the goalie's the only other time to have somebody, you know, it's only the player's got time to get that in his head, don't they?
It's a tough comparable, knowing that it's, it's an individual game. And, you see guys having stretches where their game kind of goes against them, but you probably have to be right where the goalie would be the best comparable as far as having a tough game and, fighting the puck. And then we know the importance of goaltending and, there's nowhere to hide and, that's basically where they're at.
It's going to be fun, and I'll call you later and ask you about Crawford.
Okay.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay, have a great day.
Coach Q from your Chicago Blackhawks.
You'll be glad to know that he answered it exactly the same way for you as he did for me.
It was a cool though how he covered. He wasn't even going to point it out.
No, he wasn't.
He was absolutely in a position to go, hey, lunkhead, Dave just asked me that.
Well, and you were the one who brought it up.
Well, of course. This audience deserves
it. I wasn't going to say anything.
No. If anybody's going to point out I'm an ass, it's going to be me. It's 8:56. The Steve Cochran Show continues. Number 625 live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. On Twitter at Cochran Show, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. I had lunch on Friday with my son, young Ross Cochran.
You're still talking to him?
Yeah. We're fine. Okay. That fake feud that we had because he left the show. Yeah, I got too tired to keep it going.
Okay.
Yeah. But he says hi to everybody.
Hi, Hi, Ross. We miss you.
Everybody else have a good weekend? I know it's almost 9 o'clock, but we haven't discussed this yet.
We had a very good weekend.
I'm still working on my taxes. That's a good time.
I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah, that's fun.
I know.
Guys better hurry up.
No.
Oh, by the way, you have until next Monday. You have the 18th is the deadline this year.
Oh, good. So I can push my appointment.
Procrastinate right into the weekend.
Yeah, I'm going on Thursday.
You know who always used to do his taxes like right away? Soon to be Walk of Famer, Max Armstrong.
Yeah,
do him New Year's Eve.
He never went out. He did his taxes.
Yeah. I don't even know how you do that. How do you have your W-2s and stuff?
Yeah, you don't have your stuff yet.
You know, why
am
I even asking? Like, I would ever do it New Year's Eve.
Please.
Max will be on the show in the coming days as well. We're going to catch up with as many of the new Walk of Fame nominees as possible. Not nominees, inductees. Go to WGNradio.com for that full list. There was one story from last week that kind of slipped under the rug. I think of travel when I think of Max because he's all over the country all the time. The Congress on Thursday night accomplished something.
What? Yeah. Tell us all.
Well, it's not good news.
Okay.
On Thursday's members of the U.S. Senate voted against a measure that would force the airlines to stop shrinking your seat. The pro legroom proposal was introduced by Chuck Schumer, the senator from New York. Over the last few decades, between the size of the seat and the distance between the seats, the flying public has lost half a foot of space. Flying is not pleasant at all. His idea to fix it was to give the FAA power to enact a standard for minimum seat size. His fellow senators didn't go for it. The proposal was rejected 42-54. Similar measure failed in the House a couple of months ago.
I think you get more room now in the theater. You know, you go to the theater and the seat in front of you, the row in front of you is right up against your knees. That's like to fly anymore.
It's ridiculous. Flying is miserable.
You can't even, you said this once, you can't even put a laptop
on your tray. Oh, not even close.
Table.
You can't put an iPad on your tray table.
It's ridiculous.
And again, please, if you're sitting in front of me, try to sit back. See how that works out for you.
That's fun to watch. I'd like people to try that.
Some travel advocacy groups say they're going to continue to fight for this. You might be saying, well, what kind of idiot congressman would vote against forcing the airlines not to put any more shrinkage in the seats on the planes? It's people protecting their donations from all the associated businesses tied to this and also not wanting to get the phone call of going, whoa, what are you doing from other businesses? In other words, if you limit a free enterprise business like the airline business to go ahead and operate within the means they choose to operate, what are you saying to other people?
Right.
I would argue that flying now is more a utility and ought to be regulated like a utility, the same way you regulate electricity or whatever else comes into your home.
I completely agree. I know since 9/11, the airline industry says it's taken a hit as far as making money. I don't remember the last time I was on a flight that wasn't full.
Record profits now. Record profits because there's less planes flying, less seats, and more fees.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
912, Mayor Rahm Emanuel earlier on the program. I'll let you know when the podcast is up, and you can hear Mayor Emanuel invite Andrea Darlis on a bike date.
We're doing it. We're
going to bike around the city and check out the new bike lanes.
Yep.
And in addition to that, I have begun the facilitation of a reunion of Governor Rauner and Rahm Emanuel for the good of the state and the good of the people of the city and the state.
More like a reconciliation.
Reunited and it feels so good. I wonder who's going to be Peaches and who's going to be Herb.
Of those two?
Rahm seems like more of a Herb to me. It's 9:13, and Chicago Magazine's new issue is out, the best new restaurants. And this has to be is this the best-selling cover?
Dining features are the best-selling covers. We do another one in November, but that's the topic changes every year. But every May, we do best new restaurants, and that's the blockbuster.
That's the voice of Penny Pollack. The other one is which one? What's the
November
cover?
Issue.
But what one is that? What's the cover?
We do different things. We do best new steakhouses. We do best pizza.
Yeah. All right, so best new restaurants. And one of the great food cities in the world, this has to be heated. It's a hot competition.
We nuke it.
It's microwave more than anything else. Give me a few that we should focus on.
The Blanchard was number one. And today's the day that everyone who bought a secret supper ticket finds out where they're going to dinner tonight. They buy it on faith. And then this morning they get their calls or emails or whatever the latest means of communication might be. And they're all going to dinner at the Blanchard, which is in Lincoln Park. And it's kind of hidden. It's in this funny little cul-de-sac, and you feel almost clandestine. It's so cool.
Like you're having an affair with your dinner.
Yes.
And what's special about the Blanchard?
Well, Jason Paskowitz, who's been kicking around Chicago for 20 years, finally hit his home run. He's been in a lot of places, and he finally got the Blanchard, which is his French hideaway, and he's fantastic. He's so passionate about French food.
But is this foofy French where people that don't eat French food are going to feel awkward going there?
No, it's so cool when you walk in. You're like going to want to make it your place.
Okay.
And you can have classics, you can have your escargot, and you can have bouillabaisse, and it's not... You can understand what you're eating.
Nice. Now, you talked to the chef slash owner and asked him why he loves French food. What's the answer?
He loves French food because he found out that that's where all the technique and the roots of real cooking exist.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Like if you did a family tree of food, most of it would lead back to the French?
Exactly.
How about that? I didn't realize that.
No, and he supposedly has a wonderful pastry chef, too.
He does. It's just an all-round fabulous.
Can you imagine if you had a French restaurant with a crappy pastry chef?
No, but she's supposed to be wonderful.
One of the best.
Here's something Jason told me. He really wanted to be a baseball player, but he didn't have the height or the muscle at the time that he needed to have it to try out. So if he had developed a little earlier, we may have lost a great chef.
Yeah, but imagine how good the post-game meal would be.
Yeah.
Arbor came in second in Logan Square.
Arbor is admittedly different. I might even venture the word weird. It's in a green building, which is the way the world is going, which is great. And it's sort of like your funky friends from college invited you to dinner. It's just,
and they're making whatever they have in the kitchen?
They're making whatever they have, but they are refining it to the nth degree, and they're so enthused about it that they might talk to you about it so long that your dinner gets cold.
Is this a fusion concept, or is it not even that together?
I don't think I would call it
fusion. The only part of the fusion would be what they throw in the bowl?
Yeah. It's whatever. And they got honeybees on the roof, and they're growing herbs.
Okay, now, look, I get that that's a cool idea, but that to me feels like a year in goodbye. How do you do a long form with that?
Because they keep changing it up.
Oh, I guess there's...
It's the adventure.
I guess weird is forever.
Weird is always in.
Andrea Sivi, you got one you're interested in there, and you've got one now.
Well, I like all of them. I told Penny what I used to do, and this is true. I would go through with a little check mark and try and go to as many as I could. But now there's so many, so I have to be a little more. I have to look at the pocketbook. I like what you did, though. You put some of the places that are not necessarily in your top 10, but are very popular right now. I keep hearing the Angry Crab over and over and over and over again. But you do these like little. Kind of yellow bullet points, kind of getting
right.
Honorable
call
mention.
Outs.
Yeah, Angry Crab. The lines for this place, Steve, are wrapped around the building.
Have you been there?
No, not yet.
You should kind of wear, if you have an old, ugly poncho, like from college.
Be prepared to be sloppy if you're going to eat there.
You're eating at a long picnic table. You are rolling up your sleeves, and your food literally comes in a giant plastic bag. And there's paper towels at the end of the table for you, but you it's table service, which I like. I'm getting tired of standing in line for food.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely delicious. You get your nutcracker, your butter, your fabulously fresh seafood, and you don't have a zillion choices, which I also like.
I like that too.
Like, I just want what I want.
Right. Why do I have to lose my mind trying to figure out what that is? Monteverde is an Italian joint that's affordable, which I don't think we have enough of in the city.
We don't have enough. And Sarah Grunberg came from Spiaggia, which is not so affordable.
Right.
And she just has traveled around Italy, and she feels that that's where her soul mm-hmm. originated, and she makes the pasta. And everyone there, it's just a pasta party. You got noodles hanging all over the place.
Sure.
And it's rustic and it's delicious.
Great food.
Great food.
Now, on the upper end of things, Fulton Market is being redone like in a million different ways. There's some great spaces over there. But Swift and Sons is a steakhouse. Do we need another steakhouse?
Is the Pope Catholic?
I suppose that's true. Okay. Because it's more high end.
It's more high end, and it has a concierge service, which means if you forgot to buy the theater tickets, you can talk to the concierge while you're ordering your dinner, and maybe he can get you into the show you wanted to go to.
Nice. Look at that. All right, last question. And again, this is the cover story in Chicago Magazine. Penny Pollock, best new restaurants, 15 picks from an innovative French bistro to a decadent steak temple. You only get to pick one, and you're locked in forever, and you have to eat there for the rest of your life. Which one's it going to be?
Oh, De Quay, which my team voted number 3.
Okay.
And I trust my team. That's why we've been together for so long.
That's in Lincoln Park, right?
It's across from Victory Gardens Theater.
Okay,
I think.
Yeah.
It's Dutch-Indonesian. Who knew?
How about that fusion?
Do you like mussels?
Mm. I love them.
Okay, and curry. You know what? When you get mussels, usually there's a whole delicious broth at the bottom of the bowl, and you don't get to it until you get to the bottom. These mussels, every single one of those shells has a dollop of this curry cream sauce that is to die for. I hope you use cliches.
I hope you fired your team that voted him third. Penny Pollock, we love you. Great work as always. Chicago's best new restaurants, cover story of Chicago Magazine. Rich Lerner from the Golf Channel in a couple of minutes here. Stand by.
At one point, I told Mike, I said, you know, buddy, it seems like we're collapsing. And, you know, I wanted to be brutally honest with the way I felt towards him so that he could then respond with what is necessary to get us to rebound. And he did. But boy, you wonder about not only just the tee shot on 12, but why can't you just control the second shot, you know, and make 5 at worst, and you're still tied for the lead. So, big picture, this one will hurt. It'll take a while.
9:24. I love Rich Lerner. Rich Lerner is, I think, one of the best things in golf, about golf. I'll watch Rich Lerner do anything. I'll watch Rich Lerner tell me about the phone book. And nobody even has a phone book anymore. But I'd be curious to get Rich's perspective on this, because I don't know. And welcome back to the show, Rich. It's been a long time, and I guess you know what a big fan I am.
It's really nice of you to say. I'm available for bar mitzvahs, weddings.
That's good, because I'll do the bookings.
Anniversaries.
Yeah, I'll do the bookings. That's fine.
Special anniversaries.
Right.
Yeah. That was a sad and strange afternoon in golf.
It was so weird, because all of us who played the game for $2 here or there, you'll have that 30-minute period where you just lose it. You just don't know where your game went, but you don't expect to see it at that level.
I know. And I'll take you back. You know, we were in our compound yesterday afternoon. Chambly, I was there, 3 or 4 producers, and I mean, we were just giddy punchy after a long week, you know, throwing our own commentary at the television, writing stories. I had just written a piece that would have aired last night, detailing all of Spieth's incredible historical accomplishments. We were all excited about it. We had called our headquarters in Orlando. They were pulling old interviews. Spieth was going to be the youngest to 3 majors since Gene Sarazen in 1923. He was going to be only the fourth to repeat as a Masters champion. The other 3, Tiger Woods, Nick Faldo, and Jack Nicklaus. Younger at 3 majors than even Tiger and Jack. It was one superlative after the next. And he made everybody look at. They're saying he's the greatest putter we've ever seen, better than Tiger. And then we look up and, all right, well, 10, okay, you can make a bogey there. It's
sure.
A 5-shot lead. It's 4. He's got the par 5s ahead. It'll be fine. 11, okay, we can even understand that. And by the way, he had a really good shot into 11, the third shot, and I thought maybe he was going to save par. That, to me, actually, when you look back, was kind of a semi-big moment. Had he made that putt, I think he goes to 12 in a better frame of mind.
Right.
But you can, again, you can afford a bogey at 11 because it's the hardest hole in the golf course. And then you get to 12, and we get 12 is tricky. 12 is famously diabolical. There's shifting winds that you can't see high above the Georgia Pines. But you expect he'll aim, you know, at that bunker and do what he's supposed to do, because if nothing else, Jordan Spieth is tactically brilliant. He's strategically sound. He just made a bad swing. I mean, he had said something to me a month ago. I saw him, and he said, you know, if he could just tighten up his iron play, he'll be fine. And you know, he was fighting it all week long.
Yeah, he was.
And it's really hard to explain. You want to maybe speculate what the pressure got to him, and that's possible. It is possible. You can't get inside a guy's mind. But when you say that, you go, wait a minute. Was he feeling pressure on 7, on 8, on 9, when he poured in those birdie putts? I don't know. It's a weird game. It's a brutally evil game at times. It's a great game. I used to say there's a little man, the little man that exists inside everyone's head when you play golf or play sports, but especially golf. And the little man says, you missed this. I know you want. You missed that one on number 3.
right. I hate that little man.
Right. You try to tell the little man to get lost. And historically, everybody's been affected by the little man, has been haunted, except for Nicklaus. And the little man was afraid, or as I say, like a little kid was scared of Tiger Woods for
right.
a 10-year period. He
right.
didn't get near Tiger. I don't know if the little man popped up with speed. I do think he was wound tightly all week. He was fighting it and fighting it and fighting it. And he's an intense guy as it is. And he just maybe came unraveled. And what I would say, though, everybody wants to know, well, how will this affect him? Just step back for 1 second here. He damn near won 5 majors in a row. All right?
That's exactly right.
He competes his ass off, this kid. He really does. And at times, he doesn't even pass the eye test. You look up and you think, am I watching here? Is he? He's like a college golfer. He's just like a high-level junior golfer. He's scraping it around. And he doesn't look as jaw-dropping as Rory McIlroy, as Adam Scott. He doesn't look as strong as Jason Day.
No. He's the kind of guy that kills you, because at the end of the round, you look up and he beats you by 5, and you go, what happened?
Right. Well, he outthinks people. He out-prepares people. And he out putts people. Wow.
Yeah.
So I would say he's 22. Look back at, say, McIlroy at the Masters of 2011 when he had a 4-shot lead 18 holes to go.
Yep.
And he shot 80 the final round. The very next major was the U.S. Open, and McIlroy won it by 8.
Right.
So this kid already has 2 majors, and he's 22. And he will get it right. He will figure it out. But this one, Staines, this was one of the great collapses in the history of golf. There's no other way to you can't sugarcoat it. It was a 5-shot lead, 9 holes to go, and it wasn't so much that it slipped away. It completely disintegrated, crumbled inside of about 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I tried to have non-golf fans wrap their head around it this morning. I said, imagine your worst day at work, your absolute worst day at work, and now put it on TV in front of millions of people. Because that's what happened. Were you struck at all by the choice of language that he uses in regards to, in that clip we played with his caddy?
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't he need to own it individually, or will that come?
Well, that's a really good question. I guess you could read into that a little bit, but it's been we since he arrived on the scene.
Okay.
Which I think was sort of strange to start, but okay, we're all on board. What a great team guy in an individual sport. So we is Michael the caddy and the agent Jay Danzy and the physio guy and the whole team. We and it seemed endearing until until it's not. Until
that's a great point. It's a great point.
Until he hits two balls in the water, and then he should step out on the island and own it. Maybe that's just a sort of a psychological tactic. And he did credit Michael, for getting him back. And he did fight back. I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. You're supposed to birdie 13 and 15. 16 was where all of America groaned. I mean, it was almost like pro wrestling at that point. It was the good guy was down and out. In a shocking turn of events, three bad guys came in from the locker room, and they laid him out cold. And then the crowd rallied, and the kid rallied and got up, and he made the stirring comeback. And then he hit a gorgeous shot in the 16th. And had he made that putt, man, the place would have been going bananas.
Yeah.
And then he needs one birdie in the final two holes to force a playoff. And just a little too amped up on that putt at 16. It was wild. I mean, it up until that point, it was a strange Masters. It was, it got really strange there. But in terms of the roars, nobody really had made a move. It was just speak, speak, speak. And then three guys who were like 18 over par making holes in one at 16. That's where your roars came from. And then, it all turned. I'll tell you, the focus at Augusta so often is on the two par fives on the back nine.
Right.
That's where you can turn it on. That's where you have those sink or swim gambles at 13, at 15. But 10, 11, and 12, that is a brutal stretch of golf. It really is. Those two par fours are all you want, and then 12 is just an amazing.
I'd love to see the statistics on Masters winners who have gotten through Amen Corner even par. Like, how many times have you won, gotten through even par? You're the best, Rich. I appreciate you jumping on. Your buddy Ryan Dempster is on with us every week. Is there anything you'd like me to pass on to him this week?
Oh gosh, what's he up to?
He's doing baseball coverage for us, and he continues to yak. But if he owes you money, I can certainly get it out of him.
Is he going to play some golf, a little quiche? And play a little $5 in there.
That's a good call.
I'm not good enough
to play. No, that's a good call. Dempster and I fly into Orlando. We meet you. We play golf, and you two have a fist fight, and I separate you. So
come in, guys. We have a charity event in December. You guys are welcome. Broadcast from there.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, we got to take you up on it. At Rich Lerner GC. At Rich Lerner GC. Oh, and by the way, tonight, Golf Channel Films, and Golf Channel's put some money into this, this films division, and Golf Channel Films presents 86, the Nicklaus documentary, which is great.
Yeah, the Nicklaus piece. By the way, I could listen to Yes Sir if you lock me in a
so good. Room, it's so
told
good.
Me to listen to Vern's
Yes
call.
Sir!
Hey, yes, I get 1,001. I went, but you know what? I tell the story in the documentary, and real quick the other side because it's really interesting. Do you know that two holes prior to the 17th in 86,
right?
Ben Wright, the great announcer, when Nicklaus made eagle. Do you know what Ben Wright's call was?
No.
Yes, sir.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
True story, and it rankled him. For a long time, Vern basked in all the glory, and it was nothing intentional on Vern's part. It may have been in his subconscious. It happens to announcers.
Sure.
But Ben Wright's call when Nicklaus made the eagle was a tremendous bit of announcing. It was, yes, sir. And then he let the roars wash over the ground, and then he said, there's life in the old bear yet.
That's tremendous.
So they explore that in the piece tonight. Cool. Fun. But anyway.
All right, man. Well, listen, I appreciate it. Stand by 1 second. It's the great Rich Lerner at Rich Lerner GC. Golf Channel Films, the documentary 86, is tonight. .946, Gary Pinkowski is here, executive director of your Chicago Marathon. I say you are because I've chosen not to run this year.
Oh.
I won't be drafted into this race. I will not. I have chosen not to run.
What about all your training?
I feel I need that for in general.
Okay.
Yeah, all good things must come to an end.
Today's a big day. How are you, man? Nice to see you.
Good morning, Steve. Andrea, Dave, thanks for having me on this
morning.
Of course. I'm sorry to hear that, Steve.
Yeah, but I know. It's a real blow to the event. So the event this year, what year are we in?
We are going to be celebrating the 39th running of the Bank of America Chicago Marathon on Sunday, October 9th. Which is we're in the registration process, which is coming to a close tomorrow at Tuesday at 2 p.m. So if you want to register for our – get involved in our registration process, you have until tomorrow at 2. Or you can support one of our wonderful charities and access through supporting the charity program.
Do the charities set their own deadlines, or is there a deadline for that as well?
The charities set their own deadlines. There's information in there on our website, chicagomarathon.com. We're really proud of this program, Steve. We announced this morning that our 2015 event raised $18.7 million race morning, which exceeded our record of $17.7 million of 2014.
That's a pretty good day.
Great day. And since 2002, we have raised over $150 million for our charity program.
That is tremendous.
So, just something we're really, really proud of.
There can't be anybody close in the country, if not the world, doing
that. We're one of the top fundraisers in the country. Sure, it's something that's
that is amazing.
We're so proud of, and it's really about partnerships. Bank of America has been amazing in their support of this. Last year, we had over 170 charities. Some of the charities have a local focus, a national focus, but it's just been a wonderful relationship. Not only the money that is raised that goes directly to the charities, but also the information about all the good work that's there. What we've seen, these relationships have continued through the year, where our runners and the charities become partners, the runners become ambassadors. So proud of it.
And the charities, some have tons and tons of people, some have smaller numbers, right? There's no, once a charity's registered, I know they're responsible for a minimum number, but beyond that?
Exactly. We have charities that may have 5 runners. We also, some of our larger charities may have 1,800 runners that are raising money for their efforts. So,
who are some of the biggest?
Well, World Vision is one of our largest charities. They have about 1,800 runners. They're one of our largest fundraisers.
That is unbelievable.
Their focus is clean water initiatives around the country, around the world, as a matter of fact, Eastern Africa, which is great. American Red Cross is another big partner of ours.
And the idea is you raise a minimum amount of money set by the charity, I believe, right?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a threshold that they have. That
the charities have, and they get you on a team.
They get you on a team. And what we saw last year is all of our charities exceeded their goals. So that was
that's
great.
Cool.
But it's also a great partnership for the runner. I mean, about 30% of our participants, or close to 30%, are first-time marathon runners. So a lot of things that charities do, they have hospitality race morning, they have training programs, they have clinics. So it really is, it's a great relationship. And the result is the $18.7 million we raised last year.
I love how the charities are the motivators, too, because we interviewed the gentleman last year, John Lavender, who was celebrating the one-year anniversary of his heart transplant by running the marathon, got all his college friends involved, his family, and I think they raised close to $30,000 for the American Heart Association. But you had friends then joining, saying, hey, I want to run the marathon for you, but also to support this cause,
sure,
too,
absolutely,
whatever it might be. So
it makes you
motivator.
Feel good, and it's good for you. The training programs that these charities do, too, are pretty great, because if you are a first-time marathoner, and you don't have a clue what you're doing, you don't have to go out tomorrow and try to run 26 miles. And they step you up the right way.
Correct. There's so much more information out there. I mean, anyone that lives in the city or out in the suburbs on the lakefront on Saturday or Sunday morning, a great deal of camaraderie. So it used to be the loneliness of the long-distance runner. That doesn't exist anymore.
Well, I know that you might be a tad biased about this particular race. Having said that, I have been around the country a fair amount, thrown out of some fine cities. And I've seen, you know, for instance, a rock and roll marathon in San Diego and different places, the Grandma's Marathon in Duluth. There's a lot of places that have fun marathons. I've never, ever, ever been more moved by a marathon viewing public than has happened here in Chicago. It is a party for people.
Sure. I mean, it has become a great Chicago tradition. This is the 39th running. And it really is about partnerships. If you think about everyone that plays a role in this, the participants, the corporate community here, which has been amazing with their sponsorship, the residents, our local businesses, it's a magical day, and somebody knows someone that's running. So it's become a great Chicago tradition.
If you've never watched a marathon, pick a neighborhood. I mean, because now I know the people used to say the parties in Pilsen, but now Bridgeport, South Loop, I mean, they all have these viewing parties. If you've never watched, go and just cheer.
Well, and get out of the loop. I mean, everybody packs into the loop. The loop's fine, but get out of the loop and get into some of the places that maybe you don't think of right away.
Hyde Park, some of the neighborhoods.
Sure. I mean, it's so accessible. The course is such a great tour of the city for our participants. But with public transportation, you have a great partnership with CTA. You can get on the L, get to different locations, discover some of the neighborhoods. What better way to see the city of Chicago? Steve, I don't know about you, to run, our guests, to run through these great neighborhoods.
Sometimes you have to run to catch the cab, take it to the next stop.
Hey, you drive down Kerry Pinkowski Way every day, though.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I don't have a road named after me.
How many years have I been doing this now? 27 years. So this goes to show you.
It's about time you got your own road.
We've been blocking traffic for 27 years. At least they should. That's the end result.
Before I let you go, my favorite story of camaraderie and good feelings on Marathon Day. And the number's gone up. But at the time, there were about 6,000 cabs in Chicago. And this is long before Uber. And a friend of mine was watching the marathon with us. Gail left her camera in a cab, a very expensive camera. And the cab takes off. We're over in Chinatown. We walk about four more blocks, and we're going to stay in this particular area to watch the runners coming through. We had an interest in. And it's an hour later. And we look up, and we just happen to recognize the cabbie. The cabbie pulled up. He came back to that spot looking for her to make sure she got her camera back.
How cool is that?
So
For those of you who have lost faith in humanity, there's a quickie. But I think Marathon Sunday has something to do with that.
It is. It's a unique. It's like every other day, and unlike any other day. I think that there's just an energy. And it's not always about the elite athletes up front. You have people from all 50 states, over 100 countries, to come here to really challenge themselves, to discover
all ages.
It's an amazing community, and all ages and abilities. And it's just a great day where people come out and cheer on people. And really, what we see. People watch the race and they go, "Wow, I was so motivated by this person or this woman that I'm going to try it. I want to give it a shot. How do I get involved?"
Yeah, how about that? That's the amazing thing. I see runners that are really fit. They're ripped. They're trained. Then you see some guy named Cy who's 84 running by them. Dave, last question from you.
Well, I know you're focused on this year, Kerry, but next year, the 40th, are you already working on something special?
We are thinking about that. That's going to be a big year for us, the 40th running, so a celebration. We've got some things we're working on already, so we're looking forward to a big year.
Bank of America Chicago Marathon, the 39th, is on, and the deadline is tomorrow afternoon, correct?
2 p.m. Yes, that's when the registration will close, but go to our website, chicagomarathon.com. Check out go to the charity program portion and take a look at those charities. If you're thinking about running, you'll receive a guaranteed entry through that relationship if you develop a partnership with one of the charities. So chicagomarathon.com.
Nice to see you, bud.
And Andrea, one thing. I
know.
You were down at the Shamrock a week ago, and I put the pressure on you. So
he did. I was covering it. Kerry was gracious enough to do an interview with us.
You must commit. You must commit to not run.
And on live TV,
don't waver.
And on live TV, made me commit to running the shuffle next year.
Well, there you go. That's a big step.
But I said
that's
I have it. To cover it, Kerry. He said, they're going to give you distance.
You know, the half marathon's also great. I currently am running the 127th marathon. It's just over a mile.
That's great. I haven't heard of that one.
Nice to see you, Kerry. Good luck, man.
Thank you so much for having us on.